A very warm welcome to this World Game Changers podcast, where your host, Paul D. Lowe, embraces many crucial conversations that compassionately contribute towards creating a better life and world. Paul's intention is very simple, to help get people's inspirational insights and motivational messages out into the world so others may benefit.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Returning guest, I should say returning host, Kristen Johnson from the United States of America, and more specifically, sunny California. I was going to say a warm welcome, Kristen, but you're in such a warm place in the world. I don't know if that's needed to be said.
Well, warm welcome from sunny California to the world.
Okay. So, listeners, we thought we'd build on our previous podcast that Kristen and I did called The Recycled Teenager Returns to the 18th Century. And you may recall that we spoke around the period drama called Poldark and some of the amazing storylines in there. And we kind of touched on last week or the previous episode this kind of moral dilemma, this whole thing around, you know, can a person love two people? And we singled out Ross Poldark as the central character and the two women that, in my humble opinion, he does love and will always love for very, very different reasons. So on that basis, Kristen, where do we take it from here?
Well, I believe last episode, we left off on the question of trust. Which is a huge thing in life, and is definitely a huge thing in Poldark, with this romantic side to that drama, and it is in large part a romantic drama. So, trust.
Yeah, that's it. You know, that's an interesting insight there. It is a romantic drama, and listeners, Kristen and I have had countless conversations around Poldark, as indeed many other aspects of life. And I think that's the first time, Kristen, I've actually ever heard you say it's a romantic drama. And respectfully, I don't know if I agree with that, you know. I mean, there's this strong essence of love in there, undoubtedly. Yeah, I don't know. Challenge me on that, if you will.
Gladly. Well, I don't think it's I think there is romance, but I don't think it's romantic in the sense of hugging and kissing, just in the sense of that. I think the romance, when you look at romanticism, and I don't want to get too far afield on this because we're getting back to trust, but it's romantic in the sense of there's this rugged individualism. Yeah, there's a community. There's a big community, and there's a big sense of duty and responsibility and self-sacrifice that is very romantic and very heroic. But it's also about the beauty, and it's also about, when you look at romanticism, it's also like the beauty, the nature, the longing of the spirit. And I think you have just so many things, without getting into spoilers, there's also that longing for that refinement. You know, these people in Cornwall, a lot of them that aren't of the upper class are kind of are the peasant class. You know, they're not necessarily the best educated. In fact, that is Paul, we were having a discussion about education amongst ourselves and what constitutes educated, and how some very educated people can be people that haven't been formally educated can still have a lot of common sense and wisdom. But these people in Cornwall, the average people, the working people, the miners, the peasants, Poldark's house servants, whatever, I'm thinking of course, of Prudy here, but they are very, they may not be, have read Shakespeare, but they really But there's a striving for finer things there. There really is. They know that there's a life beyond what you know, they're the scratching out an existence in Cornwall, and they know that, and they want more of that. Unfortunately, it does, as you know, as with certain aspects of life today, it boils over into class envy, the haves and have-nots. But and really, Ross Poldark, again, without getting into too many spoilers, is a very romantic hero because he's taking up the cause, such a big cause for these people. It's almost Dickensian. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I love how you've positioned that because I know, listeners, of the countless conversations, as I've alluded to, that Kristen and I had, I know where she comes from in the wider context. So I kind of wanted to throw that out there, because isn't it true that, you know, what's associated with a word? What's the meaning of a word? And I think it's fair to say, and I certainly don't want to generalize, but if you use the word romantic, there's almost that sort of reaction that it is, to use Christine's terms, this kissing and cuddling. And that's a fair comment. But you raise a great point there, Kristen, that romanticism is far, far, far greater than that. You know, it's a romantic thing that Ross Poldark, and I'll use an old school term, but fights for the underdog, those that are incapable of fighting them for themselves because they're not educated, they're not in powerful circles. But he takes these people into their heart. You know, he's a crusader for the poor, for the underprivileged, and he's their voice. And, you know, I am going to spoil or give something away. You know, when eventually, against all his initially perceived principles, stands for Parliament and enters Parliament, he realizes that's the only way he can change. Although he's a man that's quite happy to stand with you toe to toe and try and change things that way, and pick up arms and try and change things that way. But I think through his emotional and experiential maturity, he realized the pen is mightier than the sword, or in this case, the politician's voices. So, yeah, I mean, you've given great context to this word romantic. Let's get back to trust. Let's get back to
Yes.
trust. There's one scene that particularly, massively, poignantly, in fact, epitomizes trust for me. And let's kind of use Ross, let's create a bridge, Kristen, if we may, because we spoke a lot about the more kind of emotional stroke romantic, dare I say, man-wife, lover connotation. We spoke about these moral dilemmas last week about loving two people. Is that possible? But I want to kind of, rather than just jump from one extreme to the other in terms of this trust, I just want to kind of put it in the context of, and here's another spoiler alert. When Ross crossed the line and let's say committed adultery with his former love, or his one of his loves, Elizabeth, by which time he was already married to Demelza, that's a break of trust, Kristen, isn't it? I mean, what's your thoughts around, and I'm speaking generally now, about, you know, once trust is broken, can it ever be got back?
You know, that's a really interesting question, and I having never experienced this personally. I'm just going by what people say, or my friends say, or psychologists say, that you know, you can heal from that kind of an affair and things like that, but it takes a long time, and maybe you never really forget. Some people can never forgive you at all, and but it happens. And the thing about and the thing that I think was so devastating for Demelza, and this is where the class thing comes in. Elizabeth is gorgeous. Not that Demelza isn't beautiful in her own right, but Elizabeth is gorgeous. She's rich. She's refined. She knows which fork to use. She knows everything to do. She's just well-mannered. She's also kind. She is privileged. An elite. Let's just throw that out there. But you get the sense that there's a finer feeling about her. And you know that because when Demelza comes to help Elizabeth and her baby and Poldark's cousin Francis and her baby, when they're sick at great cost, as it turns out, to Demelza, Elizabeth knows that Demelza is probably the only person that would dare come near because Demelza's just got that big heart, and Elizabeth understands that. So that probably doesn't, and Demelza, I don't know, it's hard to say, but I think she comes to like and respect Elizabeth, but at the same time, she's always going to wonder, am I first in Ross's mind? And that betrayal really does sting because it is Elizabeth. It's not just some one night stand. It's Elizabeth. It's the love of Ross's life. And I think that is harder to overcome because I think it's a truism that men crave sex, women crave love. I mean, I think that that's an overgeneralization, but there is some truth to that. And challenge me on that, Paul. But I think that the fact that it was a love, someone that Ross loved, is much more threatening to Demelza. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that deep emotion is the glue. You know, sex is superficial. It's an act, it's a function. It's in many respects, it's superficial. I don't want to go too deep on this because I don't want it to take us away from the main theme. But for me, it is, yeah, without the underpinning emotion to back it up and everything that you've built together as people, as a couple. It's meaningless, and I often use the analogy of baking a cake. So, when you look at a relationship, say, let's say between two people, really it's about the ingredients these two people put in the mixing bowl. And that's not too much of one ingredient or too much of the other, but it's about two people deciding what to put into that mixing bowl. And then they whisk it round. And then they put it in the oven and they galvanize it. They heat it. They put it to the test. And out of that, if the ingredients are right and the chemistry is right, a good solid cake that won't fall apart will emerge. Then what we do, because we've got a good solid cake, we can sprinkle loads of glitzy, beautiful icing on top called sex. And what we can do with that then is it is kind of really say we have co-created something wonderful. But the point for me, Kristen, is if you baked a cake out of icing sugar and put it to the heat, it'd just melt. And that's what happens for me, I think, is if you base a relationship purely on sex, it's like, it's superficial physical stuff that with time will dwindle, Whatever that physical attraction may be, if that's all there is, we lose our hair, we gain a fat belly, breasts sag, the list goes on. And so that physical attraction dwindles over time. And that's why for me, it's absolutely imperative to have that connection with someone, first and foremost. And I used the example last week from the Michael Bolton song. How can we be lovers if we can't be friends? Friendship, I think, is very, very, very underestimated in relationships. So you kind of layer it in, you galvanize it, and then you sprinkle the icing on top. Is that metaphor one that do you think would stand being put to the test in the oven generally throughout
Well,
the
I
world?
think so. I think so because, if you have a cake purely of frosting and too much sugar, what do you get? You get cavities and diabetes.
Anyway, so the trust element. I mean, there's a kind of dilemma there, and this is what we're doing really, listeners, using a period drama like Poldark and bringing out these current affairs, pun intended, that, you know, happen in everyday life, as we know. And, you know, as I've said this many, many times, there's nothing new on this planet. There really isn't. You know, sex, drugs, rock and roll's been here from day one. We paint it a different colour, we give it a different name, we stick it in a different colour package, and we say, oh, look, I've discovered something new. And I've had this particular thread of conversations, as you know, Kristen, many times with younger people, particularly when they talk about, you know, well, let's say sex. They think they've just discovered it. They think they've got this massive thing that, oh, look what I've discovered. It's called sex. You want to try it? And I heard some, you know, these young kids I shared with you. I won't go into graphic detail for the, you know, to respect the listener's sensitivity, Kristen. But, you know, that conversation I shared with you recently, and they were speaking as if, oh, wait till I tell my mum and dad about this. So, and I felt like saying, how do you think you got here?
Absolutely. And I think that, and if we're getting back to trust, that one encounter really sets a stage for, which is, of course, after Ross, Elizabeth loses Francis. She loves Francis, Poldark's cousin. She does love him, but at the same time, it's not what she feels for. It's not what she feels for Ross, and never can be, because it's a different kind of love. But she does build a home and a future and a family with him. And when he dies, it's just Ross sort of. It's almost like something snaps within Ross, and it's not grief over Francis, although he's sad, but it's like, my chance is here. He loses his head, and he also totally forgets, and Demelza knows that's where he's going. They don't say it. The dialogue is great because it doesn't come out and say on the nose, although Demelza is fairly blunt. But even, you know, even the most blunt, the bluntest of us sometimes have a hard time really expressing what's really going on, don't you think?
I do, definitely. You know, communication, the art of communication is being understood. And I've had instances today where, you know, somebody sent me a correspondence and I acted on it in a certain way, and it kind of led to a bit of confusion with a third party. And I said, well, I've followed your kind. Yeah, but I didn't mean that. And I think it's so true, Kristen, that we know in our own minds and I know in our own hearts what we want to say, what we think we're saying. But the recipient, well, that's a different matter. And I think sometimes we overlook that, especially when we're an expert in a subject. And we convey that instruction or that message or that information or whatever it may be. We convey that and it's like, well, you get that, don't you? No, you might know it inside out. It's second nature to you. But to me, as the recipient, I'm still learning. So you're going to have to slow this right down. And that's been a big, big reminder today for me. And I had to kind of respectfully challenge someone and say, well, you know, because it was, you know, the individual was like, well, you know, I think it was straightforward. No, it was straightforward for you delivering the message. But there was two of us in that process. You can only run as fast as the slowest runner. And in this case, the slowest runner was me, and I completely misunderstood it and complicated the issue with a third party. But that's by the by. Kristen, this trust thing, let's really start to home in on trust now. So, is there one scene for you in Poldark, just one that really comes to mind, that really, other than the one that we've already discussed, so I think we've kind of flogged that one to death, but really epitomises this trust thing, because there's one for me and it's massive, but I want to hear your thoughts first to see what yours might be.
Well, I'm going to skip away from Ross and Demelza for a minute. Actually, no, I'm not. When Elizabeth is married to the villain of this series, George Warlagan, we spoke about him last week, comes from wants doesn't come from nobility, but wants that status desperately. Rival of Ross, Ross does come from, the elite, it must be said, even though he has a what we might consider a blue collar sensibility. But George, is very, very jealous of Elizabeth's connection with Ross, always has been, always will be. But there is one scene where Elizabeth is about to have a baby and is go announced that she's pregnant, and George has to decide, well, is it Ross's or is it mine? Or because he's wondering for various reasons, because of that tryst, well, that he finds out about a little bit about, he's wondering whether or not the baby that he and Elizabeth have is his. And this is never fully cleared up. It's left open-ended, but it's not tied neatly with a bow, which I kind of appreciate. The fact is, it could be either man's baby because she does, I think, come to love George in a way, even though that's a hard hill to climb. If anybody has seen the series, they know. But George decides to make a decision to trust, which is not really in his nature, because he mistrusts everybody. And I think that's a huge, huge leap, and it saves their marriage.
Okay, yeah, I can see. Yeah. That's a good one. The one I'd like to share, listeners, is there's a scenario yet again towards the end where Ross, he doesn't lie to his wife and his closest friends, but he's very creative and he trusts that fate will take a hand, and he does it for all the right reasons. And he actually Is it a white? Is it a little white lie when he says to his best friend, his confidant, Dr. Ennis, that he doesn't love Elizabeth anymore, or words to, sorry, that he doesn't love Demelza anymore, or words to that effect? And you can tell that he doesn't mean it. However, it was a metaphoric sprat to catch a mackerel, because what he's doing, he's fighting for against the French invasion. He's fighting for England's security. And so he conjures up this master plan to trap the French, overturn all the enemies, all the French enemies. Now, for me, that is consummate trust, because even though he was telling Dr. Ennis, his closest confidant, friend, trusted ward, call it what you will, Ennis knew enough to know at a soul level that his soulmate was actually, and I'm going to use this term, lying, but he was being creative and he trusted him and he acted upon that. And the whole thing where, for me, Ross Poldark trusted in his own intuition, his own strength, his own belief, even if he had to lose the battle to win the war, and the war was defeating the French against their intended invasion of England. And he did that in the interest of patriotism. Now, for me, that's trust. He trusted himself. And for me, Kristen, the big thing here is, if you can't trust yourself, how on earth have you got any chance of trusting anyone else?
Absolutely. You have to trust yourself. You have to trust that you're doing the right things and at the right time for the right reasons, even if they might not see make sense, even if things are hard. And especially you have to trust that your cause is just. And that's what Ross 100% hang a lantern on it. Ross knows that what he's doing against the French is the right thing. He's fighting for his country like he always has. Like he starts, the series kicks off with him fighting for his country. Okay, it's against America, but that's 2 or 3 centuries water under the bridge. It's he's the point is he's fighting for he's fighting to protect his country. He's fighting for to protect their interests. And ironically, he's fighting at the end, he's fighting for Britain's independence from the French, because he knows if the French get a foothold, and the French military was pretty formidable at that time, very feared, they would definitely have a problem in Britain.
Any final thoughts, Kristen, as we bring this particular episode to an end? I mean, we did the kind of moral dilemmas of affairs of the heart last week. We've done about trust this week. Have we left? Is there any other stones that we can turn over to carry it on, or do you think we've done it? Do you think we've summed up the pole dot? Because I think we could talk forever and ever and ever and ever, but it's the quality, not the quantity, of the conversation, and obviously our listeners need to, kind of get out the what are the undertones, the moral stories here, the things that have stood the test of time. Any final thoughts with you, Kristen?
I think Pole Dark is more than just a wonderful period drama with wonderful costumes. And can we say a note about this Cornwall scenery? Can we see an AG in the London of the year? The London of the year, yeah, I know poor hygiene, toilet, poor hygiene, poor whatever, not access to facilities for everybody, but to the good things if you were in a certain class. But London is gorgeous. Cornwall is gorgeous. It's just, but more than that, it's just about the human heart. And drama is about the human heart in conflict with themselves. With as a screenwriter, I know the drama is about the human heart in conflict with itself, and that you've got plenty of that in Pole Dark, and that is why it's still on Amazon Prime. It's still everywhere. It's definitely lasting. I mean, they rank the best characters on Pole Dark. They actually do rank the best characters on Pole Dark somewhere. So it really has touched people.
It has indeed. Okay, Kristen, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. And so there you have it, listeners, Pole Dark, and we've come at it from certainly a couple of major different angles. And I would say that actually all we've done, we haven't even scratched the surface. But anyway, gives you something to think about. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope it's been useful. And I'm going to sign off now the way I always do, by saying, remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?
Thanks very much for listening to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Hopefully you found it interesting and helpful. Drop a line to Paul at worldgamechangers.org with any thoughts or questions you may have, and he'll be more than happy to respond. Remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?